Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by Audible. Everyone, please go to audible.com/campfire. That's audible.com/campfire to show your support and get a free audiobook with a 30-day free trial. Thanks, Audible.
Welcome to our gathering tonight. Here we share stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things. Sit back, relax, and warm yourself by Jim Harold's Campfire.
Welcome to the Campfire. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again. And we've got some great spooky stories coming up, and I couldn't be more excited about it. So I'll not blather on. You came here for one thing. You came here for the story. So why am I still talking? I'm not sure, but I better shut up. Here they are, the Campfire Stories. I love this story. We're going to talk to Vincent. He's been listening for a couple of months. He's out in California, and he was a skeptic until this happened. Vincent, welcome to the program, and I can't wait to hear this. Even reading the short description of it, I love it. Tell us what happened.
Okay. why I'm a skeptic. I've been a skeptic my whole life. When I was in high school, my brother, he told me that one night he was driving home after drinking, and he said when he turned up our road that a black mass appeared above his vehicle, and it scared him straight. He was done drinking, and when he told me that story, I know that he was telling the truth, and he believed it. Well, the next day I took that same road and turned on the same corner, and I looked back, and there was this huge black, it looked like a mass over my vehicle, but it turned out that it was a tarp off of a haystack.
Oh.
And so that explained, and I told my brother, I said, bro, you don't need to worry about spirits because that was a tarp off of a haystack.
Our eyes can play tricks on us, especially after we've had a couple.
Exactly. I mean, he thought that was a spirit that was trying to prevent him from drinking so much or whatever. So that made me a skeptic there. The other one was a little more difficult. It was one of my best friends in high school. He was kind of a party guy, and all of a sudden he was going to church three times a week. And I said, what happened? He said that he was asleep, and a demon or the devil sat down on his chest, and he couldn't breathe. We were in high school, so he said he started crying and calling for his mom. And she came in the room and prayed with him while he prayed, and then the demon or whatever it was left. And again, I know he was telling the truth, and it scared me because that's something I couldn't explain away, like the thing with my brother.
Right.
And so years later, I was in the Army and in Germany, and I heard a program on BBC or Armed Services Network or whatever, and it was talking about how in the Philippines, there's a lot of people that believe there's demons because the Filipino people were genetically predispositioned to have this chest condition where there's pressure on their chest. And my friend from high school, his parents were both Filipino.
Oh.
And so it took years for me to realize that was the reason that my friend had that incident. So that set me on the road to being a skeptic. Now we'll shoot to what happened in North Dakota. So I was working out there on a workover rig in the oil boom of the past couple of years. And I've been working out there for 2.5 years. It was all routine. And I worked on a workover rig, which is smaller than a drilling rig. It's only 60 feet tall as opposed to 90 feet. But anyway, I had this dream that my superintendent, okay, I dreamed of the rig that I worked on being rigged up on a well, and on top of the well was what I thought was a lubricator, because I didn't know what else it could be. It was about 40 feet long, a pipe on top. A lubricator would be bolted to the top of an oil well, and it's used to safely lower tools in and out of wells.
Okay,
so in my dream, this lubricator, my superintendent walked between the rig and this wellhead with this lubricator on top, and the lubricator fell into the rig. And just as it fell onto my superintendent, like, I woke up. Like you would wake up when you almost die in a dream, you know, right at the moment you're about to die, wake up.
Right.
Well, this happened with your superintendent. Right when it was about to smash him, I woke up. And so I was pretty close with the superintendent, and I saw him the following day. And I said, his name was Cleo. I said, Cleo, I had a dream about you last night that you got, I think you got killed on the rig by what looks like a lubricator falling into the rig. And we just laughed about it and blew it off because, you know, how dreams are. Well, the following day, we were running a submersible pump into a well. And the way that works is they're put together in sections because they're too long to put in all at once. So you lower like 20 feet into the well, and you add a section, and then you lower another 20 feet, and you add a section. Well, while we were doing this, the well basically it blew out. It came live, and it pushed that pump up out of the wall, mm-hmm. and we had the BOPs, which are blowout preventers, and I ran to the accumulator, and I closed the bag, which is a bag that just closes around whatever's coming out of the well to prevent a blowout.
Mm-hmm.
So what was coming out of the well was this pump that we've been putting together. It's like a 4-inch diameter pump. And so at that point, it was partially pushed out of the well, but we had it controlled with the blowout preventer. And we set a plan up that we're going to go open the bag, pull it the rest of the way out of the well, and then close the blind rams, which are used to control, to seal the well. So again, I went to the bag, to the accumulator, and I opened the valve to open the bag, and totally unexpected, the pump shot up out of the well, and everybody ran because it was an out-of-control situation. That this pump, it probably weighs 20,000 pounds, is just going to land on the ground, you know. And so even the oldest, toughest guys were running, including Cleo.
Right.
And an unusual thing is that Cleo shouldn't have been running the rig, but as soon as it started getting weird and the well was starting to blow out, his job was to take over on running the rig.
Right.
So that goes back to my dream of him being there when that. But here's the weird part. When the pump shot up out of the well, it took the 8,000 pound blocks with it, just like nothing. I mean, it was just going to come out. So I closed the bag again. And at this point, about 40 feet of pump had come up out of the well. And when I closed the bag, it caught the pump, but the pump fell over into the rig. And what I saw at that moment was exactly what I had seen in my dream.
Oh boy.
The night before.
Did the man, did your boss die?
No, he ran out away from the rig.
Oh, good.
You worried me there.
You worried me there because there was no mention of anybody dying in what you sent me. And I'm like, oh, I said, I love this story, but I don't want to see anybody get hurt. Wow. But it basically came true.
Exactly. Exactly. And the reason that I had told Cleo that it was an accumulator was because the pump blowing out of the well has probably never happened on an oil well anywhere ever.
Wow.
And especially, you know, not to end up in that exact spot where it's caught in a bag and falling into the rig. That, I'm sure that's never happened ever anywhere on Earth. And yet, when it was there in front of me, it came back to me as clear as day that was what was in my dream. And of course, I told Cleo that it was an accumulator because that's the only thing that I could think of that looked like that. But then once I saw the pump there, it was like obvious that that's what I had seen in my dream.
Well, I love your call, and I'll tell you why. Because I understand where you're coming up from, originally being a skeptic, and then kind of your thought process changed after this. And I think that is life. And I think that on both sides, you know, skeptics see a couple things that are not real. Even if the person's not being dishonest, they're just misinterpreting things. And they say, all that stuff is BS. And then people on the believer side, like me, we see a couple things and then we believe everything. And I think like most things in life, the truth is somewhere in the middle. And there are things to be skeptical about and things that aren't real and maybe misinterpretations. And in some cases, unfortunately, even hoaxes. But then I think there are a lot of real things like the one that you experienced. So I'm assuming from what you've said here that now your mind's a little bit more open to the paranormal and the supernatural.
It is definitely more open, yes, because I'm no longer skeptic because that was a premonition. And that's all that I can say about it. And I don't know how it happened, but I know it did happen.
It's a great, great story. Vincent, thank you so much. A reformed skeptic, but it's okay to be skeptical. I'm skeptical about some things too sometimes. So it's okay. Like I often say, our friend Scotty Roberts is the first person I heard this from, but they're skeptics with a little S and they're skeptics with a big S. And even I am a skeptic with a little S sometimes. Vincent, thank you so much for being a part of the show tonight.
All right. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks to Audible.com for supporting Jim Harold's Campfire. Now, Audible, you know I've been a longtime fan, and it just gets better. Audible has an unmatched selection of audiobooks, original shows, news, comedy, and more. Now, as I've said before, but it's been a while, audiobooks are a great way to listen when you're commuting, doing chores that you hate, cutting the grass, at the gym, whatever it might be. It actually makes those things that you don't like actually a joy. For example, I'm not a big fan of yard work, but I pop on an audiobook and I'm happy as a clam and I get lost into it. And before you know it, it's over. In fact, sometimes I wish it would take longer so I could listen more to Audible content. Now, for our audience, Audible is offering a free audiobook with a 30-day free trial. If you want to listen to it, Audible has it. They have all kinds of content, paranormal content. It's just great. Just go to audible.com/campfire and browse their unmatched selection of audio content. Download a title free and start listening. It's that easy. And I've got to tell you, love, love, love their app. It is fantastic. A great iOS app, a great Android app, and that has only improved over time. Now, we talk about paranormal stuff on this show, but life consists of a lot more of that. And I thought this time I would do something different in Spotlight. Actually, a book that was in Oprah's book club. It's called Love Warrior. It's by Glennon Doyle Melton. And it has 4.8 out of 5 stars with over 1,200 ratings. It's the newest Oprah Book Club 2016 selection. And it's the highly anticipated new memoir by bestselling author Glennon Doyle Melton, who tells the story of her journey of self-discovery after the implosion of her marriage. And I know that we have a large female listening base out there, and I think this is something that may very much appeal to them. And obviously, it is a great book and well told. And that's the unabridged version. So that's one you can get for free. So again, here's the key. Get your free audiobook with a 30-day trial at audible.com/campfire. That's audible.com/campfire. I have not had one listener who has taken advantage of this, who has come back and said, I didn't like Audible. What I hear is they love Audible. You love podcasts, you got to love Audible. We thank Audible for supporting Jim Harold's Campfire. Show your support. Get a free audiobook with a 30-day free trial at audible.com/campfire. Thanks, Audible. Well, next we have a special segment on the Campfire. We're joined now by Keith Linder. Now, you'll recall we've featured him on the Paranormal Podcast, and I believe he's been on the Campfire as well. And we've done multiple shows on the home that he lived in the Seattle area, Seattle, Washington area, that had some very interesting activity. And last we spoke with Keith, I believe it may have been the beginning of this year, on the Paranormal Podcast, he had had some investigators in, and they were really finding some stuff. But there have been quite a few developments, I understand, since then. So we thought it would be great to catch up with Keith and find out, you know, what's happened in the interim, what the update is. Keith, welcome to the program today.
Hey, Jim, how you doing? Thanks for having me.
Now, I think when we spoke last, actually, you had investigators on site. So let's kind of take it back from that point back several months ago and tell us what happened with that and what happened subsequently.
Yeah, so the last time we spoke, Steve Mara, parapsychologist out of the UK, and Don Phillips, his chief researcher, were out in the house at the end of January. And they spent about 6 to 7 days that first week of coming out and had found a lot of information, a lot of evidence. And I believe they reported that back to you and some of your listeners. But they went back to the UK, and then now they had to decipher about 450 EVPs, majority of them Class A. And then we stayed in communication as the evidence was slowly but surely being compiled. But interesting enough, while they're doing that on their end, some new phenomena, Jim, began to happen at the house that was kind of unnerving for me. This was a new phenomena that I had never experienced while being in the house for 4 years.
Wow.
There was a substance now coming from the living room wall, sort of like a ooze, clear-like substance that I had never seen before. And it was coming out in real time while I was in the living room watching TV.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So, in fact, it was behind a painting, and I noticed three streaks of fluid coming down from this painting. So I removed the painting, and lo and behold, there was this substance coming down in rows of three right behind my entertainment center TV in the living room. So I called a friend, Patty, who lived relatively close, because I wanted to get other eyes on this as we try to capture this. And she also was a close friend of Dawn and Steve. So she got to the house within 20 minutes. The oozing was still occurring. And we took videos and photos and put that on my YouTube channel. But we also, or I also emailed that to Steve and Dawn, because I'm keeping them up to date on anything new and strange. The second thing is, if people who follow this case know, one of the most profound things are the wall markings in my office. And when Steve and Dawn were here, they were doing analysis as to what that ingredient was, what that substance was. But when they had left and took some of that back to the UK, I decided to take one of the doors that has the 666 on it to the paint store. And if you've seen those markings in my office, you know that's some kind of weird black material, looks like oil or something, acrylic, but
right.
Nobody knows what it is. So in borrowing Patty's husband's truck, we took it to the local paint store, which is about 5 minutes up the street. And we marched it in there. The guys at the paint store could not analyze it. They took samples, could not tell what type of substance it was. Yeah, they could not match the paint. And so we were kind of disappointed in that regard. We thought we was going to, you know, get the whole voila deal there. But they were dumbfounded. So we left, took the door back, put it back on the bed of her truck. Now, her husband's truck has a cover on it, like a, you know, it covers the flatbed.
Sure.
It's like a Ford 150. And we drove back to the house, my house, and as I'm pulling the door out from the truck, unloading, about to take it back inside, Patty sees these patterns on the ceiling of the cover of the truck. And we pause, we look, and the markings that are on my door, these markings resemble the markings on my door. They're not wet, it's not moist. The drive from the store is about 5 minutes. It's a warm day. There's no there's no moisture. Yeah, very weird. And it's all over the cover of the ceiling, Jim, basically. And it's identical, because we did comparisons of 2014, when the markings were in my office. This is now, I believe, April of 2016. and it's everywhere. And then when we pull out our cell phone, she sends a text message to her husband and sends him a picture and says, "Hey, honey, did you have anything like this on your truck?" And he's like, "No, I don't know what that is." And as we're recording it, you know, trying to capture the markings, after review later, there's an EVP on there. And the EVP was picked up on her phone and mine and verified through Stephen Dawn as being an EVP. So the two and two are related. But most importantly, the wall markings the signatures, the acrylicness of it, it's all there. It was very interesting. So that in the Walmart or that in the ooze stuff in my living room made Dawn and Steve want to come back. And they came back toward the middle of April. Keep in mind, at this stage, I knew I was moving out the house. We knew back in January that I was moving out the house. So they came back, and this time they stayed longer. They brought with them a third associate, Nick Kyle. He's with the SSPR out of Scotland. And he was going to be the third verifier of any evidence they captured while here for the 7 or 8 days that they were here the second time. And truth be known, they captured almost equal, if not surpassed, the amount of evidence that they got the first trip because they bought different equipment. No sense of trying to go after the same evidence. So they wanted to go after different areas and focus on different things. And this time they got some images. Steve did. That's also on my channel. They've caught movement. They saw or heard and witnessed objects thrown, as well as Nick Kyle was there seeing some of this. We saw and heard a big frame poster, pretty big, hangs in my hallway, fly across the wall. They caught way more EVPs, you know, this time once again, Class A. And they took the ooze into sample bottles back to the UK to try to analyze what that liquid fluid was. And right now, it's still inconclusive. It's been through, I think, several tests coming back inconclusive. The wall markings in the office and the door shows a high deposit of calcium in it. That's what's been written down in the official report. But it still has an inconclusive attached to it as well.
And the precipitating reason that you decided to move, were you just kind of tired of this constant drama and constant weirdness?
It was a culmination of a lot of things. One of the things that I wanted to do with this case in this house is, number one, prove to that me and Tina were, number one, telling the truth. And I wanted to have a substantial pile of evidence, not for me, but for the homeowner, who's aware of all this, by the way. Nothing has been done without the homeowner's approval, as well as have this stash of evidence for the next house occupant. And I truly felt that this evidence needed to be compiled and somewhere repositoried for the paranormal community. Now, that's one aspect. And then once I achieved that, once I got, you know, Steve and Dawn and the organization that they belong to being credible, and they got substantial amount of evidence. And then also the root cause may not 100% be known, but there are mitigating factors that we can do or the next house occupant can do to maybe alleviate some of this strong activity. So it's best to know these things moving into a house. Me and Tina were caught unaware. It'll never be known if the house occupant or if the owner, in fact, knew, but just didn't tell us. But at least we know, and at least whoever comes in after us, they're not coming in unaware. They're not going to be heavy-handed in trying to rid the spirits, because a lot of the reactions that I got from the spirits was me being heavy-handed in my approach to try to get rid of them. And the last thing is, it became, especially the last 6 months, Jim, basically the bombardment of the poking, the prodding, the bed shaking, the sheets shanked off the bed, the wall oozing, and all that stuff. It just really felt time to go and just see what the next chapter of this, if anything, is going to happen. And like I said, we would never know that until I exit the house, because now we have to see. There's two things we have to see is, will there be activity once I've left? And will activity follow me?
And do you plan on, you know, sticking with this and following developments? Are you still involved with the investigation of the house? It sounds like you are.
Yeah, I'm still compiling because there's a lot of evidence. And the only reason why the report is taken, so keep in mind the official report from Seth, from Steve Murray, still has not been released, but they were inundated. Nobody expected the amount of evidence that these gentlemen would get, but it all has to be ciphered and cataloged. But they're at the tail end of that. I have evidence on my own that I throw up on my channel. I mean, we're finding new stuff daily. There's videos that I'm re-looking at that are 4 years old that have EVPs on it. Because Stephen Donwire here taught me a new sense of evidence gathering. And I'm going back to my old notes and my old stash, and I'm finding EVP. We found EVPs, Jeremy, of the house exorcism that Father Roy did. That video is a year and a half old, and Father Roy did an exorcism, and when I reviewed it, there's over 20 EVPs in it. We have spirits talking and laughing, making mockery of the house exorcism session. And it's Class A, and it's very startling revelations to hear 2 to 3 spirits commenting on the proceedings as it's happening at the moment. But I never had known that existed because I just videotaped it, and I'm trained to look for the, you know, the cabinet doors flying open when he throws holy water here and there. But no, the EVPs are the most profound thing of that exorcism. And also, you know, I am putting my memoirs together in a book form to write the book, to tell the story. And Steve and Don's involvement will be probably the last chapter of that book.
Well, I hope that you'll keep us up to date on what's going on. It's an interesting kind of saga to follow. What new comes on, and certainly when you have that book, we'd love to have you on the program. Keith, thanks for being one of the places that you touch base with every once in a while and keep us up to date in the amazing happenings at this Seattle home.
Oh, I sure will, Jeff. Sure will.
Doug from Arizona joins us around the campfire. He's been listening for a couple of years. We're very thankful for that. And playing cards. I always thought there was something kind of mystical about playing cards. Even when I was a little kid and used to do magic tricks in those books that you would buy. Well, anyway, Doug has a mystical story surrounding some playing cards. Doug, welcome to the program and tell us what happened.
Thanks, Jim. Well, this happened a little over 10 years ago. I was living in Colorado, working at a Taco Bell. And I was working at the Taco Bell and I was cleaning the dining area, and I look down and I just see a red six playing card. I forget if it was a diamond or a heart, but it was a red six card. Right. Just lying there. So I picked it up, kept it. I keep weird things like that all the time. I don't know. But kept that. And then a couple months later, I was walking home from work, walking up to this triplex that I was living at, and just right there on the driveway, there was another red six card just lying right there in my driveway. And I was like, oh, that's kind of weird. You know? It's not every day you find two of the same cards. And so I kept that one. And I thought, you know, it'd be real freaky if I found another one, you know, the 666 thing. So now, about a year and a half later, I was living in Arizona, and I was going camping with my brother and my friend. And we like to camp in places where, you know, there's not picnic tables or outhouses, you know, the real camping, because I'm originally from Alaska, so I like the real camping. we went to this spot we're looking around, and we got there kind of late, so it was a little bit dark, so we had our flashlights out looking around for a good spot to set up the tent. And I scan over this bush, and I just see a playing card sticking out of this bush, and I walk up and pick it up, and sure enough, it was another red six card.
Dun, dun, dun. Three yeah. Red sixes.
Yeah, and I just happened to have the other two in my backpack, because it was just my regular backpack that I always carry with me. And so I said to my brother and my friend, you guys want to see something freaky? And I pulled the other two out, and I had all three of them. And I had my, you know, I was freaked out, though. I didn't know, you know, whether to start praying or go to Las Vegas, you know. So I had my brother take a picture of me just so I'd have proof that I actually had the three red six cards. And then once we got the campfire going, I was just so freaked out. I just threw them. I burnt them. I put them in the campfire. This story actually has a campfire in it too.
Yeah, I know. I like that. I like that. Very good. Very good. But that's not the end. If I understand, that's not the end of the story.
Yeah. I thought that, you know, the curse or whatever was over if I just burned them. But sure enough, a couple months later, I was walking back to the place I was living at with my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time. We were walking up the driveway. And I looked down, and right in the driveway, there's a card lying face down in the driveway. And I said to my wife, I said, if this is a red six card, I'm going to freak out. And I flipped it over, and sure enough, it was a red six card. And my wife actually screamed. She was so freaked out.
Now, do you have any idea why you're attracting this? Do you assign any significance to it? What do you think's going on here?
You know, I really don't. I've never had anything happen like that. You know, it's such a weird, freaky, you know, coincidence, I guess, is, you know, I don't know. But, I was raised a Christian. And so I've always known about like the mark of the beast, the 666 and all that and everything. So I've always had knowledge about it, but I've never, I don't know why this happened, but it's just, what are the odds of that? You know, I mean, and for a little while, you know, just for a second, I thought maybe, you know, someone was messing with me or something, but I asked the only people that could possibly, you know, be messing with me, my brother and maybe my wife and they swore up and down that they had nothing to do with it. So.
Well, the wild thing is, I mean, when you were working at the Taco Bell, I'm guessing your brothers or your wife wouldn't have necessarily been there when this happened.
Oh, yeah, no. So, yeah, no, they definitely not.
Well, what's freaky is it's 666 and it's red. So you're like, who could be behind this? I feel like I'm not going to quote the church lady. If you're probably not old enough to remember the church lady,
yeah.
but that's the first thought that comes to mind. Well, Doug, let us know if you find those other two sixes, will you?
I will. Definitely, Jim. Definitely. Yeah. Thanks so much.
And thank you for joining us on The Campfire.
No problem. Bye-bye.
Christina joins us tonight from Oklahoma. And, you know, we get a lot of ghost stories, some UFO stories. But not many stories on the topic that we're going to talk about tonight. And it is a frightening one, a skinwalker, an encounter with a skinwalker. Christina posted on our virtual campfire group, and she's on the show sharing your story. We appreciate it. Christina, welcome. I know you've listened for many years, you told me, and I appreciate it. And please tell us what happened.
Well, thank you, Jim. It's my pleasure. Well, as I wrote on the Facebook page, back when I was in my 20s and 30s, I loved to take off by myself and just go on an adventure. And on one of those adventures, I'd gone into Arizona. And I spent several days just exploring the different towns around there. And on the last day, I decided to go down to Tucson and do some exploring down there. West of Tucson a little bit is a place called the Sonora Desert Museum. Mm-hmm. And it's a museum, but it's sort of a zoo too, but it feels like you're just actually really in the desert with wildlife. The way they've done it is it's beautiful. It was summertime, but I don't recall exactly what month. It was hot, but not unbearably hot. I'd gone down in the morning, maybe 8 a.m., 9 a.m., somewhere around there. And there were very few people there that day. And I was exploring, having a ball. All the cactus were blooming. It was just beautiful. I was in the very, very back of the property all by myself. There wasn't a soul around. Just taking pictures and looking at the little lizards and all the little creatures running around. And I was bent over, taking a picture of something. And all the hair on the back of my neck just stood up. instant, every alarm in my body went off. Mm. And all I could feel was this just horrible sense of dread came over me. So I stood up and turned around, and probably about 5 or 6 feet behind me was a man. He looked very old. His skin was just really dry and leathery. He had a Native American look to him. His hair was probably down to his shoulders, and it was snow white, dressed all in black, which I thought was strange because it was so hot, and he had on a long sleeve black shirt and black pants. But what was really odd were his eyes. They were so pale, they looked like ice cubes. And my very first thought when I looked at him was, that's not a real person. Mm. I need to get away from that right
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be around people. So I turned and started head for the gift shop in the front where the entrance is. And I was walking at a quick pace, not running, but walking fast. And numerous times as I was walking, I would look over my shoulder and he was right behind me. But very casual looking, like he wasn't struggling to keep up with me or rushing to keep up with me, but he was always right there.
Right.
And his eyes were distant and just glazed and not really focused on me in particular, like he would stare past me. And I thought, well, that's really kind of weird. So eventually I'd made it to the gift shop, walked in and walked around in the cool, trying to cool off a little bit, drink some water. He was still in there. And I had this feeling that no one else could see him but me.
Mm.
And I sort of was tempted to ask someone, hey, do you know that guy or can you see that guy? But I just didn't want to come off as a crazy person,
right.
So I didn't say anything. And I thought, you know what? I'm so uncomfortable. I've never been so uncomfortable. I'm just going to go. So I got my keys and I started heading for the parking lot towards my rental car, and he's still behind me. And I'm walking fast. I'm trying to get to that rental car. I'm thinking, okay, if he approaches me when I get to the car, I'm just going to have to turn around and pop him or something just to get away. I get almost to the rental car, and at the back of the rental car, there's a coyote standing there.
Ooh.
Coyote, we make some eye contact, and he looks past me. And I could tell he was looking at whatever was behind me. So I turned and looked, and the old man was frozen. He wasn't looking at me. He stopped walking. He was focused completely on that coyote.
Oh.
So I hopped in the car, started the car up, started to back out. The coyote was he had moved to the side a little bit. And as I backed out and looked in the rearview mirror, the guy was completely gone. No sign of him.
Ooh.
There's no way I could have lost him in that parking lot. I mean, there was hardly anybody there that day. So I kind of sent a mental thank you to the coyote for whatever reason. I knew he helped me. He was there for me. And as I pulled out of the entrance to get onto the main road leaving, there was another coyote standing there. And huh. I sent a silent thank you to him, and I was out of there. I was gone. I've never had an experience like it in my life, but I just knew it was bad, and I had to get away from him really bad.
You think he wanted to do you harm in some way?
I don't know that he wanted to do me harm, but whatever he was or it was, nothing good about it. There was no good intention there. It was like someone that had there was no empathy, no compassion. There was nothing to him.
And that's the thing. You kind of think it was some kind of skinwalker, shapeshifter, that it wasn't really human. It was just presenting itself as a human.
Yes. And I had spoken with one of my coworkers who's Native American and very much involved with her tribe and their traditions. And I was trying to explain to her what happened, and she put up her hand and said, no, Don't talk about that out loud.
Ooh.
If you do, you can bring that here. So she pretty much shut me down. Didn't want to hear any more about it. Someone later on, several years later, suggested that it had been a skinwalker. The only thing is, I was under the impression that they were always in animal form.
I was under the impression they were shapeshifters. I'm guessing that if they're shapeshifters, they could take the form of a human. I would think.
Yeah.
And you said
true.
Your friend shut you down, but in a way, she validated you too.
Because
if she would have said, well, yeah, let's talk about it. I'm not worried about it because it isn't real. That would be quite a different thing. She said, let's not talk about it because I believe you, basically.
Right. Well, one little funny thing that I thought of later on, after I had actually posted the story and saw and read a bunch of the comments from the followers, was I remember my dad. My dad's passed away many years ago. He died when I was 20. But I remember him telling me that when he was about 5 or 6 years old, and they lived in Louisiana in the middle of a cotton field, nothing around, cotton, miles and miles and miles. They didn't have a car in those days. And they had a little bitty house. And of course, they didn't have air conditioning. So all the windows and doors were open, especially during the day. And he talked about sitting in the doorway inside the house, playing with cars or something along those lines. And he looked over his shoulder, and there was a man standing on the porch, all dressed in black, with white hair, and eyes so pale that they almost looked like ice. And he said he remembered looking at the man and feeling a horrible, terrible sense of something wrong or bad. And he turned to get my grandmother's attention. And when he turned back, the man was gone.
Sounds familiar.
It was so funny that I just thought of that a few weeks ago. And I thought, well, I wonder if that ties that somehow. Because my impression of it when I was in Arizona was that it wasn't deliberately there looking for me. That it was something that maybe I stumbled across.
Ooh.
But then when I think of the story my dad told and the similarities, I thought, ugh, maybe it is. I don't know.
Wow. What a story. Well, Christina, thank you so much. Thank you for sharing your story over at the Virtual Campfire. Folks, if you're not familiar with the Virtual Campfire, you can go over to Facebook and search for Jim Harold's Virtual Campfire. And sign up. It's absolutely free. And people like Christina over there are over there talking about the stories, sharing their own stories. And if you're listening to this and you're familiar with the Virtual Campfire, but you want to get on the show, certainly sign up at jimharold.com/campfire to sign up for this program, too, because we love to have people in both places. People like Christina. Christina, thank you for being a part of the campfire here and over on Facebook. And we appreciate listening all these years and sharing your story.
Well, thank you, Jim. I appreciate you very much.
Well, we have a repeat caller. He talked to us a few weeks ago and had that remarkable story about his dad and his dad's attempted suicide. Now, luckily, Chris grokked this out psychically, and it all had a happy ending, but it really was fascinating, and I do believe there is this golden thread we've talked about it many times. And Chris has another family story. It didn't happen to him, but it happened to his father-in-law, and this particular type of story is one that has amazed me and I always want to hear more about. So I'm very anxious to hear it. Chris, welcome back to the program and tell us what happened to your father-in-law.
Thanks, Jim. It's a pleasure to be back on the show. And so, yes, my father-in-law, he's a very smart guy and a very practical man and very, I'm not sure if he's a materialist as such on the sort of, at least officially, but he's very sort of sensible and conservative in his kind of viewpoints on things scientifically and that kind of thing. But he said that he told me when he was in his 20s, I believe, he had a fever that was very severe. He'd previously been an atheist completely, and he So he was lying in bed. He was sweating profusely and feeling very ill with a fever and a high temperature. And then all of a sudden, he felt completely fine and lighter than air and was looking down on his body from above. And he was describing this to me with just such clarity and such it really struck him. He was describing it like it had been like no other experience he'd ever had, and that it was absolutely real, completely the most vivid experience he'd ever had, and that he could feel the cold of the ceiling. And this is one of those accounts that I've heard on your show. In fact, it's quite a common thing, isn't it? I believe amongst sort of out-of-body experience.
Yes.
He could feel the cold of the ceiling pressing on his back, and he was looking down at his body. And this went on for some time. And then eventually he snapped back into his body. And this was another thing that really struck him. And I've heard this in other cases as well, that he immediately was hit by how uncomfortable and ill he felt and how he had how he was sweating profusely again. And the way he described it, it was just sort of very passionate and very kind of vivid. You know, he absolutely, and I, you know, like I said, he's not a man that would ever make this up, and he'd never publicized it. I'd never heard him, you know, he'd never, in fact, I don't think any of his other relatives that were around had even heard this story before, you know, but somehow we got onto the topic and I brought it up, I think, you know.
Sure.
So, yes, sorry, you go.
No, I was just going to say, you kind of touched on it. The thing that interests me in this is the fact that it is so consistent with what we hear. In fact, I was just working before this call on Campfire 5, which will come out, hopefully, knock on wood, by the end of September. And I'm assuming this call will be up by then. If it happens to be after that, then it's already out. And there was a physician from, I believe, Puerto Rico, and he talked about an out-of-body experience that happened to him as a child. And what was interesting, it was a high fever, very similar to what you're saying. And he, you know, when it happened to him as a child, he had one thought process of it. But then as he went to medical school and learned what he was suffering from and understood, because he came from a very poor village, they didn't have a lot of money or a lot of medical care, he was able to understand what had happened to him. And he still had that vision, though, of the out-of-body experience. So he was able to put the science template on top of what had happened to him. But he also said, you know, there's a lot more to the life than just science. And this definitely, I'm paraphrasing, but the sense was that it made him a believer about out-of-body experiences and another plane that we visit. So I'm always fascinated by it. And the thing that I think is the greatest proof of all is just the consistency between these accounts.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I mean, you know, essentially, there's no reason why it shouldn't be science, is there, essentially, other than the fact that it's been so kind of, you know, dogmatically rejected for so long, you know, whereas actually I think there was a big research project, I think it was in the Netherlands a couple of years ago, with masses of evidence pro out-of-body experience and pro near-death experience, I seem to recall.
Yes.
So I'm sure it's only a matter of time before it becomes mainstream, I hope.
And I'm not sure if it is, but it might be the work of Sam Parnia, Dr. Sam Parnia.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one. And I think there's other stuff too, isn't there?
Oh, yes. Like, and you go back to the stuff that Raymond Moody did as well, which is Life After Life, very fascinating stuff. Oh. I could talk about this particular topic all day, but Chris, I thank you so much for your support, listenership, and for being a part once again of The Campfire.
Thanks, Jim. And I have all your books so far, so I'll look forward to the next one.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thanks, Jim.
Hey, are you looking for a great gift for a family member, maybe for yourself for the Halloween season? Please, please, please check out my True Ghost Stories adult coloring book. It's great. On Amazon, it is, I think it's averaging 5-star reviews. I think we have 31 reviews as I speak today, and only one of them is not 5 stars. That's pretty darn good. And I'll tell you who else is good. Len Peralta, the fabulous artist. He did concept art for the Ghostbusters movie, the recent one that came out this summer. He's done work for the Mystery Science Theater 3000 guys, some of those guys. He's just multi-talented, and he illustrated this, and it was curated by yours truly, because I can't draw a stick man. So please check it out. You can find it on Amazon in the country of your choice. Most countries, I think, have it now. If they don't, let me know and I'll check into it. And then also for the direct link, you can go to jimharoldbooks.com. That's jimharoldbooks.com. And you'll find it there and get the direct link to the book. It is a great gift. It is perfect for Halloween time, so don't delay. Get it today. It is the True Ghost Story adult coloring book. Thanks. We have Francis on the line from New York City, and we were talking a little bit before we start recording here, and Francis was telling me that he has had a lifetime of experiences, and it sounds like he plans on calling in and kind of sharing some of those with us in the months to come. But we're going to start now with some of his first experiences that he had. And he's going to share those on the campfire. Francis, welcome to the program. And tell us a little bit about how this whole journey began for you.
Hi, Jim. I just want to thank you for having me on the program. And I just like to preface, like you said, I have a lifelong time of experiences. And I'll just tell you a short portion of which I think would be interesting for your listening audience.
Sure.
Basically, born and raised in New York City. And my parents got married. And they moved into an apartment. And at that time, my mother wasn't pregnant yet. And a month later, my mother became pregnant. And these stories I'm telling you, I haven't told anybody or expressed any of my experiences till I was about in my 40s. Because most people, if you brought it up, they would look at you like you had your head on crooked. So I really didn't tell any of my stories to my family or my friends.
Right.
So with that being said, my parents move in and my mother becomes pregnant with me. And at that time, which I'm just finding out now, my mother expresses she had this sense of a something watching her. And she would get these feelings within the apartment as she was pregnant with me. And time goes on, I'm born, and we're in the apartment. And at this time, we stood there till I was about almost 3 years old. And I recollect things in the apartment that I tell my parents that they say to me, well, there isn't any way you could know these fine details at such a young age. So we move to Staten Island, New York. And one of my very first experiences was in my room as a kid. I was about 4 or 5 years old. And I woke up at night and I look. And I sit up on my bed and I see this. I don't even know what you want to call it, a creature or some apparition or almost like I can't even describe it. It was almost looked like an entity of some sort staring at me, looking at me. I look at it, it turns and it runs into the floor. Now as a
kid, my goodness.
I don't really say anything. I just kind of sit there in my bed, kind of frightened, and I fall back to sleep. I always had that in my head. So as I become older, my father's job transfers him to Arizona. So at this time, I'm about 11 years old, and this is when it starts getting more weird. We move into this newly built house, and there's no rhyme or reason why anything should take place in this house. It's new construction, it's a subdivision. And things start happening in this house, I notice. As I'm standing in the bathroom, I notice in the corner of my eye, figures walking by the bathroom entrance. I'll be combing my hair or something, and I look, and I don't see anything. So I look out in the hallway, I don't see anything. These things continually happen. So one night I'm in my room and we had a cat. I had my door closed. I'm playing in my room. The cat's in the room. And out of nowhere, the cat backs up, stares at my bed, starts hissing, growling, spitting.
Ooh.
I'm like, what is wrong with the cat?
Oh, my goodness.
And I just feel this cold sensation come over me. And I pick the cat up and I try to bring it towards the bed. Now, the cat flips out. runs towards the door and is trying to scratch its way out the door. I open the door, the cat runs. And I don't know what to make of it. Time goes on. I see more black apparitions walking down the hallway, very distinctive. I even follow one that goes into my father's den. I go in there, there's nothing there. You got to remember, at this time, I am not telling my family anything. I am just absorbing all this. I don't know what to make of it. So as time goes, my parents take a little vacation, and my grandmother comes over to watch me. And I'm up a little bit late at night. My grandmother goes to bed in a spare bedroom. I go to bed myself, and I'm laying there. All of a sudden, I hear blood-curdling screams coming out of the room, the spare bedroom where my grandmother is. I am frightened. Oh, my God. I leap up out of bed, and I run out the front door, and I run to the neighbor's house. I don't know what else to do. I get the neighbor comes in, we walk back in the house, and I'm like, Grandma, you okay? She's in the bathroom. She goes, yes, I'll be out in a minute. So my neighbor leaves, my grandmother comes out. And I go, are you okay? She goes, yes. She goes, I was laying in bed, and I woke up, and there was this man standing over my bed with a knife.
Oh, man.
And she describes this figure exactly what I've been seeing roaming the hallways in the house. So that was my first indication that what I was seeing wasn't within my mind. It was real. I was really seeing things in the house. And at this age, you really don't know what it is. You don't know what to make of it. And like I said, I wasn't telling anybody in my family or any of my friends. But at that age, I really don't know what the whole paranormal thing is. I have no concept of it. But one thing I do know, I always felt like something had been watching me throughout my life. So in that house, those experiences were always happening to me, seeing black apparitions, the cat freaking out at times, seeing things that I wasn't seeing at the time, but feeling cold presence in the house and whatnot. And for some reason, one day I came home, my parents were at work. I would come home from school, and I went into my bedroom. I was laying on my bed. And for some reason in my head, I had this mantra that I kept repeating. And where I got it from, I still don't know to this day. And I would repeat in my head, why are we here? Why are we here? I contemplated, why am I here on earth? It's just a weird thing for a kid to be doing at the age of 11, 12, and 13. And as I was laying on my bed, I would go into this trance state, and I would come up out of my body. And I would have an out-of-body experience within my house. And telling people this, they look at you like you're crazy. It's happened to me. I know it's real. And as I've become older, I haven't been able to do that. And I believe it's because my mind maybe is more closed or maybe not as aware. And those are the experiences that was happening within that house.
Now, do you think that it was that house was chosen or you were individually chosen?
I think to a degree I was individually chosen because I still have things to this day that happened to me. I have dreams that have come true. I've had experiences of where I would be out somewhere. And I'll just give you a quick example. Later in life, I had moved St. Louis, and afterwards we used to go to a party in the park. It was like towards the weekend, and I remember meeting this woman that I used to see in the gym I went to. And what would happen to me, I would just look at something and something would pop into my head and it would tell me basically what was going to happen. I remember looking at this woman and saying, I'm going to marry her. And I don't even know why I would even be saying that. And there was no rhyme or reason because I didn't even know who she was. Never really hung out with her, knew her in passing, in the gym and whatnot. And sure enough, in an odd sense of events that had happened, moving back to New York, not even being with her, I wound up marrying her and having children with her.
Huh.
And these are some of the weird things that have happened to me.
It sounds like you've had a life that's really involved in this area. And I would love if you could come back on future shows and share some of the other experiences.
Jim, I would love to. I can get a little more in depth with them, and I would love to do that with your audience, get a little more details, and I enjoy your show.
Well, thank you so much, Francis, and thank you for being a part of the campfire.
You're welcome. Stay spooky.
Thanks so much for listening to this edition of The Campfire. I hope that you enjoyed it as much as I did. And hey, as we are getting in on the spooky season, I know there's going to be more and more kind of spooky gatherings. Hey, whip out your smartphone and show people The Campfire. And if they've got their smartphone, hey, take their smartphone with their permission and subscribe them to the podcast. Show them what's all about, the free podcast, Jim Harold's Campfire and the Paranormal Podcast. Both free podcasts, ones that are skyrocketing in terms of listenership, and kind of indoctrinate them into the fold. We would certainly appreciate it. That helps us tremendously. And also support our friends over at audible.com/campfire with that free audiobook and 30-day trial. We thank you so much. We'll talk to you next time on The Campfire. And as always, stay spooky. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Jim Harold's Campfire. Tune in again next time for more stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things.